All right, about to go around the NFL. Let's, question of the day. I do appreciate this, and I wanted to put this in. This is one of those I'm right, everybody else is wrong takes that comes in on the YouTube page. RC Cola is better than Coke and Pepsi. Fight me. I don't remember the last time my lips touched some RC Cola. So I can't even
been
I
a
can't
while. Weigh in. It used to be strong, though, man.
I used to like Fanta.
Oh, yeah.
A little flavored.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Do some Fanta.
No, Fanta is strong, man. Yeah. They still going strong.
Especially if you get it in the glass bottle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That pure cane sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in a good space. Let's get to some football just to check in on what's happening out there at the Houston Methodist Training Center. A name that continues to pop up over and over and over again. John Mechie.
Hmm. What to do?
He is really trying to make this.
He's making people jobs tough.
Well, that's the idea. I mean, that's when they say it's a competition. Sometimes it really is. And sometimes, you know, you do have to, you know, there are guys that sort of make a statement in the preseason.
Yeah. Good thing is that the offense is finding a little bit of their groove here lately, but it's been an up and down day. And it seems like, according to Texans Cap, shout out to the man, Schultz was getting in Morig's face after a big hit on Hutchinson.
Go figure.
Hey.
Dalton Schultz.
He is number one on the might actually start the brawl at the joint practice.
He's the thug on the team.
No, wow.
He's the guy.
He's the thug.
He's the guy that in your group that says, do you hear what he just said to you? Did you hear what he just said?
You think he's an instigator? I don't think he's that kind of instigator. I don't think he's, bet you gonna hit him, though. I don't think he's that guy. Nah. I think he's just the guy that's like, I will go and I will start it if I need to.
Mm-hmm. Nah, he's the guy that, get off of me. Get off of me, bro.
Yeah. Or the guy that you kind of accidentally bump into at the club. And
you want to go?
Yeah.
You want to go outside? Yeah. You want to go?
Step on the shoe by mistake. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Get off of me, bro.
He seemed very nice and introspective when we've had the opportunity to talk to him.
Yeah.
Yes.
These are caricatures.
Yes.
Let's go around the NFL now. And I mentioned the NFL has kind of racked up a couple of L's that are interesting legally. We mentioned John Gruden earlier in the week. He was granted an opportunity to continue his lawsuit versus the NFL for wrongful termination. And he'll have the opportunity to have discovery. So the number of emails that have happened in the NFL outside of just the probably handful that were released that obviously led to John Gruden no longer being the head coach with the Raiders. You imagine that there's going to be some real digging into some NFL emails that could be really problematic. Now, there's another lawsuit that the NFL was operating with against a former NFL head coach, now defense coordinator Brian Flores of the Vikings. His lawsuit that he had against the NFL and three of the teams, including the Miami Dolphins, who he was coaching for at that time, and I believe the New York Giants, and don't forget, the Houston Texans.
They interviewed him.
Right? Though a Manhattan judge in a court of appeals there ruled that Flores can proceed with his claims against the league. So this will also continue to go. The NFL obviously was hoping that wouldn't be the case and they could kind of tamp this down. This is kind of wild. The NFL is losing on multiple fronts in this, and I don't know how much this will hurt them existentially, but I know that they're not happy about it.
Well, they've got plenty of good lawyers, so we'll see how this particular case,
not good enough to kill these yet,
plays out. This is true. But what I'm interested in is just the fact that it's this case. We've kind of spoken for years now about, well, you know, the Rooney Rule, that guy's a Rooney Rule guy, this guy's a Rooney Rule guy. Nobody ever really, you know, follows up with it legally until Brian Flores. And I'm interested to see just the effect of the lawsuit by itself, you know?
That's a great point, because I'm obviously just talking about it from the NFL's perspective of this. But, and Brian Flores, remember this, I think this started gaining some traction as like a class action, if memory serves, where he was trying to get other coaches.
That's right, it was
on board with this. And clearly this is not the type of action you take just to get some money or what have you. I mean, he's still coaching in the league right now. This is one of those where you believe yourself to be trying to make a difference and a change. And I do wonder like what tangibly can be brought from this kind of thing. And of course, the idea that the NFL was trying to do was trying to force this into arbitration, right? Mm-hmm. This is trying to say that this was under the jurisprudence of, well, we'll handle this with an arbitrator where we can kind of control the permutations. No, this is going to court, big court. These conversations will be had publicly, and it'll be had in a space where, I mean, societally, we're never really good when we start talking about race.
Yeah.
So that is going to be very interesting. But you're right. Like, seeing how
just,
this is handled.
Just the fact that it's happening.
Yes. You know. Seeing how this handled. And honestly, if Brian Flores wins, and my brain is not expansive enough to get to the idea of what does it look like? Like, mm-hmm. what are the changes that ultimately can be put into effect for the NFL to make hiring practices more equitable or whatever, what have you, of what I imagine Brian Flores is looking for here.
Well, and you talked about discovery yesterday. Ooh, baby. The discovery on this one, if there's any semblance of, well, I got to interview this guy. Ooh, man. Oh, boy, that's going to get interesting. Because, I mean, we've all kind of like felt that, like, oh, well, they're going to hire so-and-so, but they have to interview this guy.
Right.
We've all felt that. And if there's any discovery where in which there's some text, some email, some, well, let's hold off on that because I need to interview this guy. Then we're talking about a hornet's nest.
Yeah. But the reason why I brought up the idea of I'm interested in what actionable can
right,
be done
right.
is I think that the NFL itself has been invested in more diverse hiring. You can kind of evidence that by looking at who actually works in the league offices, and it's a fairly diverse group of people. The tough part about it is it's owner's discretion, mm-hmm. right? When you talk about hiring, and you can put different kind of rules to help them and, you know, look at and consider more people and hope that when you put more talented people in front of them, that maybe they will make decisions that end up ultimately looking more,
yeah.
I don't know what the right word is, diverse, equitable, so on and so forth. But ultimately, they're still, as the owner of the team, they're going to make that decision.
It's their call.
And I don't know how you forcibly change mm-hmm. the hearts and minds of the people who are ultimately making those decisions if they are not actually going to consider these things, right? So I think that's the thing that I've racked my brain over every time these conversations come up.
And you should.
And I don't know how you actually get those.
It's 32 individuals or 31. 31 individuals, and you know, it's up to them to make that call.
So, speaking of those individuals, one of them loves showing his ass to get attention, and I think you know which one I'm talking about.
Who's that?
Gerald Wayne Jones, who owns the Dallas Cowboys. Earlier this week, out there in California, they had a red carpet event for the Netflix documentary that's, I think it's like a 10-part series, which thanks a lot, Michael Jordan. Everybody has to have a 10-part documentary. It makes me so mad.
Could have done it in two.
I hate it so much. On the 90s Cowboys and that dynasty, the last time the Cowboys were effectively good on a large scale. And on the red carpet, as Jerry does talk, and you have this quote here, don't you, Fig? This was Jerry Jones talking about, I mean, well, just the way that he comports himself and handles his business when it comes to the drama of it all.
Well, I do believe if we're not being looked at, then I'll do my part to get us looked at. The beautiful thing for networks streaming companies is that the NFL is a 365-day-a-year interest factor. A lot of programming, you have to spend as much to make it, to promote it, as you do to make it. The Cowboys are a soap opera 365 days.
The screening will begin.
When it gets slow, I'll start
Please
up.
Please take your seats.
And so it is, it's wonderful to have the great athletes, have the great players. But there's something more there. There's sizzle, there's emotion. And if you will, there's controversy. That controversy is good stuff in terms of keeping and having people's attention.
This man is hamstringing his team so that he can keep the drama alive, ain't he?
Don't be late, by the way. It's time to take a seat.
It was blasting that Destiny Child, too. Jalen Green probably like, who is this?
I just caught that. And I saw someone say, he said the quiet part out loud. No, he said the loud part out loud. He always does this stuff.
That's the thing. That quote of, and if it's, you know, I'll stir it up or whatever. Yeah. He's made that exact quote a number of times. The thing about that gets me is he has progressively gotten, like, it's gotten bigger and bigger.
More brazen.
Like, this is what, like, the fourth or fifth time in the last decade that he's taken to task in negotiation his best player for seemingly no good reason, and if you were to extrapolate it, maybe just to have the Cowboys in the news. Dog, this can't, like, this doesn't help you.
Yeah.
This ultimately, you know what gets you in the news? Winning football games, dog. Like, being a good football team keeps people's attention on you. It is the stupidest thing in the world.
But when you're not winning, and you are disappointing, I totally get it because they are the Dallas Cowboys.
But the problem is,
no, they need to win, and that'll do it easier.
But you also hurt your ability to win by doing this.
That's
like
true.
Legitimately losing all of these negotiations with these players because he's ultimately going to pay them. He's done it every single time.
Yeah.
When you ultimately pay the players, you are hurting your ability to actually get things done. And not only do they do that, right? Because this is the funny subsection of it. Mm-hmm. We mentioned this when Jake Ferguson got paid, and I don't think that one will hurt them, is they end up paying other dudes to try and entice the player.
Yeah.
I harken back to 2019 when Ezekiel Elliott was in this situation. They paid a linebacker named Jalen Smith, who had had an injury in the bowl game in Notre Dame and clearly was not the same player as a pro. They gave that guy an extension, a costly extension that you probably would not have wanted to pay that player, but you did that, giving out money to, I don't know, entice Ezekiel Elliott to get out of his holdout. They did the same thing to the tight end this year in order to try and, I'm like, this is all so stupid. It just operates so stupid, which gives me such pride in the Houston Texans. And you are not doing anything of that caliber.
No, they're not. But yeah, look, he really can't win in this case, because when he's talking, it is affecting him, like you said, affecting the product on the field, relationships, et cetera. But people also realize that him talking has now just become, it's almost become clownish.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
100%.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's where they are. So laugh at the clown, I guess, in that instance, as he continues to stir stuff up. Do you believe this at all? Roger Goodell, who is the commissioner of the NFL, apparently in a report told ESPN employees who they're now in bed with, obviously with ESPN having, or with the NFL, no, ESPN having a 10% ownership stake. No, other way, NFL having a 10% ownership stake of ESPN. There we go. He told ESPN employees that the NFL will not get involved in journalism, saying, the report said, quote, Goodell emphasized that ESPN employees that the league won't get involved in the network's journalism, close quote. Journalism, man. Believe it? Very good. I will take that as the entirety of your answer, which was a very slight chuckle.
That was a chuckle. Come on, man. Teams that don't have interest. The NFL, when they don't have interest, have gotten involved in journalism at other places and made threats and tried to angle and leverage, etc. Of course they are. Of course they are.
Yeah. I think the daily reporting is not going to be where it is.
Sure.
I think it's when you get to the heavy stuff.
The big stuff.
Do they lean?
Yeah.
Do they lean? Do they create the hierarchy that happens and has happened, to be honest, like for at a newspaper for a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't even talk about it in the sports sense.
Yeah.
Where you have an owner who is invested in some level of interest outside of the newspaper that they own.
Yeah.
And they tell their editor-in-chief, hey, not really fond of this. And then you get a level of hierarchy all the way down the ladder, leaning on and pressuring on to the point where either the story doesn't run or a story ends up being kind of changed in its tone and tenor in order to appease. Like, I think that it's inherent with that conflict.
The leaning and the pressuring is exactly what it's going to be. Some editor, some program director is going to say, hey, I'm not going to tell you what to do in this instance, but blah, 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 blah. So that's the pressure. And all of a sudden, you're affecting the journalism.
Yeah. Real quick, top 100.
Oh,
As voted by players.
The latest
ones who have come out. Arizona Cardinals safety at 34. Buda Baker, he's had a huge jump. Buda Baker is really interesting because he's starting to get to a point where I think people are looking at him as maybe being a lesser version of himself. And he had not made a Pro Bowl in the 6 prior seasons. He's jumped up 55 spots in this one.
Oh, wow.
Like, Buda looks like that dude again, where early on in his career, you were like, oh, this dude could be a transformational type safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then at 33, running back for the Green Bay Packers, Josh Jacobs.
I'm a big fan of that guy. Was that a drop?
No. He actually did not. I don't think he made the ranking last year, so this is a huge jump for him.
Yeah, and the reason I asked was a drop, because remember, he started kind of slow last year, right? I want to say like his first 4 or 5 games, people were like, oh, okay, and then he came on again.
I mean, 15 touchdowns, 1,300 yards on the season. He had a good one all the way around, so that's what's happening with the top 100. Look at you finding your confidence
little
to
bit.
Have some takes and some
little
thoughts
bit.
On the top 100 as we give you a little bit. And someone said journalism has been dead for years. Lopez, care to comment?
I'm not going to disagree too much.
Okay, very good. All right, you're in a
little
loop.
Bit, that's not too much.
That's around the NFL, and I want to remind you the Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. All right, coming up next, I do want to talk about the Texans. I tried to bring up this conversation, but there was a podcast I was listening to yesterday that brought it back up to me. We've talked a lot about the possibilities of progression, of progress for this team, where that could happen. We haven't talked a lot about what are the possible points of regression on this team. Not that I think that will happen, but let's talk about the possibilities next. Yep. Joint practice between your Houston Texans and the Carolina Panthers. Seems like it is wrapped up out there, ladies and gentlemen. A pretty up and down day for the offense. Clearly been some good things in there. I wonder how you feel about this. Willie Anderson said that he wasn't pleased with the defense today. Said we got to get better. Was one of the quotes that I saw. Of course, we'll dig a little bit more into some of the things that were actually said out there. Shout out to Sam Warren of the Houston Chronicle. He seemed to be watching a lot of the defense versus the offense. Had some big turnover sacks and stops, but also gave up multiple TDs and big plays in the pass game. Lots of jumping off sides and coverage penalties as well. And that kind of leads very nicely into this conversation that I want to have with you here, Lopez, and you, listener, 713-572-4610, because I was having a conversation weeks ago, in fact, where I was really defending the Houston Texans and their stronghold that I believe that they have at the top of the AFC South this year. And I stopped and I was like, am I just being too positive? Have I not considered the possible places where regression could happen with this team?
And so I had that thought. I mean, because we're so close.
I kind of want to, let's have the conversation. Mm-hmm. What are the places of possible regression this year? And it doesn't mean that you have to believe that those are the places that it will happen, but what are the places that it could happen? Because we've talked about places where clearly progress can and hopefully will happen for this team. But let's be holistic. Let's look at all the areas of this. And what comes to mind for you immediately, Lopez? Because one of the things that jarred this conversation back into my mind yesterday was actually a conversation that was being had by Nate Tice on a podcast.
Yeah, and just as a quick programming note, digging deeper in everything that happened on the field today and some of the details that you just related, Seth Payne will be joining us at noon.
Hey!
Right out of the – still on the field, to be honest, because he's probably talking to some guys right now. So we'll get you that. Regression, though, is an interesting and very important point. This was a team that, made the playoffs again, won 10 games again, but was – you kind of felt like you were shorted a little bit, you know, like you were not completely fulfilled. Well, if they regress in certain places, we could be back in this situation again. I'm going to stay away from offensive line. It's certainly one that we can talk about.
Do you feel like it's possible to regress from last year's offensive line?
Yes, I do.
Can you explain that to me?
And that is
because they were
awful,
terrible.
But talent, man, talent.
I was even thinking Laremy Tunsil. Like, and I feel like that side could be worse.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Blindside for CJ.
Yeah.
You could say everything you wanted about Laremy Tunsil, and we did, but top three, top five, pass protector. You know, your franchise quarterback, he protected his ass, you know, literally from the backside. And so there's that aspect of it. But I also just like overall talent. Urshery has looked really good. I kind of expect him to be the left tackle. Is he going to be Laremy Tunsil protecting? But he might be better in other aspects. We'll see. He's also a rookie. Let's go across the line. You know, then you go to left guard, Laken Tomlinson. He's kind of bounced around the league. He's been, you know, okay. He's been penciled in from day one.
Yeah.
You know, is he going to be better? I don't know. Center, Jared Patterson had to step in. Juice Scruggs did a little bit. Now you have kind of an undersized Jake Andrews, stepping in. He knows the system, but is he better? They're battling it out right now. Right guard, it ain't going to be Titus Howard, it looks like. It looks like Titus Howard's going to be right tackle. So right guard, Ed Ingram?
Yeah, and the tough part about that is right guard last year was just Shaq Mason that, you know, maybe was dealing with some injuries, but very clearly is just was over the hill, too far over the hill at this point in his career, especially considering the other failures that were happening on offensive line with system and with coaching. The one thing that with the offensive line where I don't know how much I lean, it's, and I guess in theory it could be a point of regression, but it would have to be total failure because it was total failure last year. I do wonder how much help is going to be garnered from, even though there is less talent, and you know I would like there to be more talent on this offensive line. If they are failures in consistent ways, and maybe not consistent as in it happens all the time, but in a way that is understandable, in a way to kind of a way that C.J. Stroud can then kind of mitigate, because I know this is the way that if failure happens, it's going to happen like this. It's like with a you know car, the way that we make our automobiles. There's a crunch zone. If failure happens, it is going to happen in this portion of the car, as opposed to if you don't have a crunch zone, if failure happens, you don't know where, you don't know how to mitigate it. I think that that's kind of something that with the new Cole Popovich at offensive line head coach, and then obviously at all, you know, your offensive coordinator with the rules and schemes that it seems like they're bringing in, I imagine that if failure happens on the line, it happens in a way that you know how to mitigate. So I think even then, I am less concerned about regression on the offense.
Well, to be clear, I am too. You know, the question is, you know, where might there be regression? I do have confidence in Cole Popovich. If for no other reason, I feel like they're all on the same page now, and they clearly were not on the same page last year, you know, between Slowick and, you know, Strasser and Popovich. So let's be very clear. I have confidence in them. I think they're on the same page. I like what we're seeing in Ursary and others, including Lakin Tomlinson, who, like I said, who's locked it up from day one. All I'm saying is there, it's a valid question. Just in general, are they better? Is there more talent? I don't know.
That's fair. I think, honestly, running back could be an interesting
place.
That's
my other one. Go ahead.
I mean, we had Joe Mixon that was a make a little something out of nothing, and the offensive line obviously did not do a great job often of creating room, but that's a Joe Mixon that's getting older. You have a Nick Chubb who's coming off a couple of injuries who's also getting older. You have a rookie in that running back room. Do you have a Jawar Jordan that's in year two, but I don't know how well or how much he'll be utilized. You have a Dare Ogunbowale, which, you know, hey, that is Dare. It is fine, but I don't think it's anything more than fine. What happens if you're already dealing with an injury with Joe Mixon now? Are you dealing with more injuries? What happens if you are reaching the cliff for him and or Nick Chubb? Like, what happens in that case, especially if you don't have guys that can make more of what you have, especially as you've talked about the talent level being what it is on this offensive line?
Right. They go together. My big thing, I can just funnel it down to one thing. If Joe Mixon isn't available in himself, that's a possible regression. And I'm a big fan of Nick Chubb. I have been since day one that he arrived here. I think he's going to be good. Not just like passable. I think he's going to be good. But nevertheless, Joe Mixon was ridiculous at times with what he could do. So if he is not what he was last year, that's an area that could be regression.
Would that be the reason? Because I'm starting to wonder if that's some of why. Obviously, they love to do, but some of why there's still such a big push for Damian Pierce, because I think that if you look at outside of Joe Mixon in this running back room, who has the highest like ceiling of potential to give you something like, maybe not even like that, it's probably unfair, but something of the caliber of number one running back at this point, if Joe Mixon isn't that. It's Damian Pierce, is it not?
I think you're right. And I think the other thing that is helping him is this is a system that fits his game, presumably. You know, give me the ball, I'm going to run straight ahead. Tell me where to run, I'll run there, as opposed to, you know, the cutbacks and all that stuff. So, I think Damian Pierce, I mean, he's got a lot to prove and wasn't on the field today, so... That could absolutely be an area of regression. Let me ask you about this one, because it's been making a lot of news lately. They were not great at safety last year. If there was a weak spot on the defense, they were attacked. Tight ends after the catch, deep seam routes. They were beaten at the safety position, and now they're just looking for bodies. You know, I mentioned earlier I was listening to Matt Burke talk yesterday. He's a delight. Yeah, I love the guy.
We'll hear from him again later.
Yeah, we'll hear from him later. But he was basically saying, and I don't think it was like an act or being, you know, sort of like coy about it. He was just like, I don't know. We'll see. That's kind of was the, if I had to funnel it down to one sentence, he was like, I don't know. We're trying to find out ourselves.
As it pertains to kind of who the mans safety that position. Safety position.
Yeah, so that could be a spot right there.
I guess so. The one thing I would say is that probably you're opening up your idea, your space to, do they still have some of those explosive plays that can happen like was happening last year? And I think that The text line, I think, adequately pointed to this from the 8-2. Honestly, doesn't sound like regression on the defense if that's the way that they're playing. It sounds similar to the last couple of seasons, and I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about the possibilities for this defense of being the best and elite with the takeaways, I think that part of it is, okay, but you know, maybe they, hopefully they cut down on those explosives that happen over the top as Kalen Bullock gets another year more experienced, and you add in a good running mate with him in that defensive secondary. Well, if you don't have the good running mate and the explosive plays, I think you still have a very good defense. But yeah, that, I don't know if that's regression, but that definitely hurts the ceiling of what you can get to. But that did bring up for me, though, something that I heard from Nate Tice, Football 301 podcast, as he was doing their AFC South preview. He was talking about this Texans defense, and he was talking about linebacker and the importance of Azeez Al-Shaair. Now, with anything and you're playing football, one of the easiest answers of parts of regression is injury.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that Azeez Al-Shaair himself and the possibility of if you get injured or if you lose him for a significant amount of time could be a problem? Because this, listen to this stat that Nate gives about Azeez and how he relates to the defense at large.
When he was on the field last year, which was a majority of the season, this was the Texans ranks. Here we are. First in EPA per play. 0.15, or I should say negative 0.15 EPA per play. The Broncos last year were first at negative 0.1. So that's significantly better. 0.12 EPA per pass, easily first. Triple the Broncos rate, essentially. Suplex rate, success rate plus explosive play rate, first. Eagles, they would have been first, slightly above the Eagles. They would have been second in yards per play allowed. They would have been ninth in explosive plays allowed. But this is where it gets really interesting with Al-Shaair off the field and why he is so important. They cannot go through a whole season with Henry To'o and another guy out there, because when Al-Shaair was not on the field, they ranked 20th in EPA per play. So they went from first to 20th. They ranked 30th in EPA per pass allowed. So they went from first to 30th. First with Al-Shaair on the field, 30th with him off the field. I just want to emphasize that.
Look, man, I saw this, and it actually surprised me that it was that drastic.
I did not realize it was that drastic either. Now, to be fair, part of what made it drastic last year was the next man up in that situation was Neville Hewitt, was Jake Hansen, obviously with To'o To'o in that kind of tandem and somewhere in there. This year, you would imagine that along with Henry To'o To'o, or maybe it would be EJ Speed and possibly Christian Harris if you get him out there. And mind you, he did not practice today in the joint practice. So maybe that drop-off isn't the same. But is there still a drop-off that happens if he is not playing games for the Texans?
Well, I think at this point you just have to kind of say, yeah, maybe. Simply because Christian Harris isn't out there. We all liked what EJ Speed showed in the first preseason game. But the more important part of it is, you got to keep Azeez Al-Shaair on the field.
Yeah,
you got to figure it out.
I mean, we've talked about him being the emotional core. I've not thought about him as like the Fred Warner of this, to the D'Amico Ryans, the San Francisco based kind of defense. Mm-hmm. But it does very much feel like that when you look at numbers in that space. So I was like, oh, wow. I'd not prioritize Azeez in the way that I probably should have. And hopefully that is mitigated if you get, you know, the version of Christian Harris that you've seen before, like you've seen in that Browns game. Who was really the best player in that game for you. So maybe that is mitigated somewhat, but I think that there are still critical points, just like with any football team, to be fair, where if you get an injury, it really gets difficult. And one of those apparently is linebacker in a way that I had not considered as much. So there's probably some other potential areas. Let me know. 713.
Deep snapper.
572. you're like Tucker Addington, not sure quite how that looks, but no, I think that there probably are some other ones, and we probably haven't considered all of them, but some of the things that I was immediately thinking about, what are the places where you could actually see regression? The thing that is nice for me about it is I think any of the places that you could see regression, I think I feel comfortable with the ways in which you could answer that, except maybe like turnovers, if somehow they weren't getting the same level of turnover football that they were last year.
We're expecting that, aren't we?
I feel confident in it because it feels like they're still capable of doing that. But if they don't, somehow, some way, then you get to a dicey proposition because you're talking about a complementary offense. You would need to lean more on an offense if you're not able to generate the turnovers in the way this defense did last year. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610 from the 832. Christian Harris Alvarez. All right, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate this. I understand your point. Your point is well taken, right? Like, you're still waiting on the health to display for Christian Harris for you in this linebacker room. All right, coming up next, let's get into what's popping, and we will do that next on Sports Radio 610. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. I was just showing Fig one of the videos that's come out of the particular joint practice that's happened out here at Houston Methodist Training Center earlier. If you were out there, by the way, let us know. Let us know how you felt. 713-572-4610.
Hey, salute to all the fans out there, man, with the video content.
Well,
selfishly, man.
Yeah, selfishly. However, I don't know that we should talk too much about that, because I'm not sure everybody.
Hey, what they gonna do? Put their phone in a pouch?
That's the thing. They can't do anything.
Like you say that the pouch for comedy shows. Yeah, and what's schools.
What they gonna see? Dave Chappelle.
It's happening more and more. I think there's more and more places that are doing like the yonder pouches or whatever. Yeah. Where they actually have you.
They
lock
can't
your,
do that training camp. Though,
you say
man.
That. They might could.
Hey, that's a lot of work to be trying to do all of that.
They can't
for the
like
phones,
it,
man.
They can't like it because they have their moments where they make it clear to the media, okay, cameras down, and then the fans are fans.
They in the front row.
You telling me the NFL ain't got enough money to go ahead or like to create a partnership deal with one of those pouches companies?
No, I'm talking about specifically the Houston Texans, like all the drama.
Well,
you got to get security to watch and see who got their phone. If somebody got a phone and arguing with folks who don't want to give up their phone and all.
That's when they don't get let in. Like, I'm not advocating for this, mind you, but I'm saying they can easily put that thing together.
That's way too much drama, man.
But it'll be like before a comedy show or something. If you are, you know, the announcer, big voice guy comes on. If you are seen videotaping any part of this show, you will be removed and
you'll
phone
be asked to leave.
That's just way too much drama.
I mean, not with the seriousness that we take football with.
Just let people record, man. Yeah. They there. They want to see their favorite players. They want to take pictures.
Yeah.
How you going to do all that?
Well, there is the PR aspect of it.
No, wouldn't be the easiest thing, but I do think that is something that is worth noting. Shout out to the 832 apparently out there. It was good. Definitely up and down day, as we mentioned. Hutch was with the first team a lot. Mm-hmm. That is a note that was made. Yeah, no, I'm very intrigued by the possibility of maybe Xavier Hutchinson getting kind of that nod. We talk about possible regression. I mean, Christian Kirk and who as the pairing with Nico Collins? Like, is that anything that pops through your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. And Xavier Hutchinson, you know, not even quietly, but having a good enough camp to get in the mix in there. It definitely is something to keep an eye on. And by the way, I said like this is more important than a preseason game. I still think in the preseason game, they're going to try to run out, you know, go through sort of their dress rehearsal,
sure.
You know.
Agreed. Yeah. No, agreed as well. And then we didn't talk much about the defense. I mentioned coming in that Will Anderson Jr. said that they need to be better. I was showing Fig a video of that I'm sure the Panthers kind of put out. Ted McMillan getting a nice ball from Bryce Young and following behind maybe about a half step to a step. Is Derek Stingley. I'm like, hey.
Oh, wow.
Hey. I think that the secondary maybe had gotten very used to, and the defense in general had gotten very used to working up against the offense. Not saying that I believe that the defense will be bad, but it was like, oh, that's interesting to see the defense have a down day in a way that I don't think that we've seen them have.
Yeah, delete that video, man. Mm-hmm. We can't have that video out there on these Twitter streets. You gotta delete that, man.
These Twitter streets.
All right, some other things that are popping. How about Yainer Diaz continuing his streak of only going yard when he is playing catcher? But he did go yard, and he gave you the runs that you absolutely needed in this one.
Yainer, the difference in the game with his RBI single in the first inning, as he drills one high and deep to left field, all the way back and gone. Yainer Diaz, a two-run home run with two outs in the sixth, and the Astros now up 4-1.
Oh, out here with the folks. I need me a Yainer bomb, and I got it.
I know you love it when Blum comes through like that. Yeah. Todd Callis broadcasting from the Crawford boxes. You heard him. All like three of the four runs, because 4-1 was ultimately the final score. Three of the four runs accounted for by Yainer Diaz in this one.
Yeah, and that one they did not have a chance to get. It was well over their heads. Hit the big wall right by the railroad tracks. You know, we spoke earlier about the Astros and just, you know, how Joe Espada might be changing things up at the back end of the bullpen. The game itself, for a long time, it just seemed like, ooh, this one doesn't feel right. I don't know how you guys felt about it. Like, it didn't feel like this was going to end well. You know, Hunter Brown was kind of not – he wasn't struggling, but he had moments of frustration because he missed the zone or didn't get a call or got the bot call. Then, you know, the offense was out hit 8-4. They were doubled up. They only got four hits. But Yonner Diaz came up with the big hits. It was one of those where like, whew, that was a lucky one right there.
Yeah. But shout out to the Astros getting a victory. They back up to a one game lead. Thankfully, the Mariners lost to the Orioles, and they'll have the day off, which much needed ahead of, what'd you say, 10 games, 10 days?
10 games, 10 days after today.
Yeah, so definitely want to make sure that you're in your best spirits. I hope everybody's getting off their feet because they need to be on their P's and Q's in this run. It's very tight. It used to be a 7-game lead, not anymore. Only one between the Astros and Mariners. And shout out to Bennett Sousa, shout out to Brian Abreu. Getting that one done, they're going to be guys that you have to focus on quite a bit.
Abreu was hitting 100. Four or five times he hit 100. So he's embracing that role. It's a different world when you're pitching that ninth inning, man.
It is indeed. Did you do the same thing I did early on when Altuve damn near messed up play at second base?
Oh, God. I meant to text you guys.
I knew you would.
I was in the midst of.
See, I thought, I don't know if you heard that split second where I was thinking
twice.
About it. I was like, should I bring it up?
Twice. First of all, there was a. It was a pop. Was it a pop up? It was a grounder. It was a pop up that landed in right field. And how he got halfway down the line when it's right in front of him from between first and second, I have no idea. And then they almost picked him off on the very next pitch. I'm like, oh, Altuve and his base running. It's just one of the most.
How could you be that bad at base running, man?
It's one of the weirdest things in the world.
Like, such a good player. I would say a smart player, too.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yes.
How could you be so bad with this?
They almost got him twice in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Now, obviously, that's base running. He's just going to be base running because he's going to need to be offensively. I will say that is one of the upsides for me personally of Yordan not being there is having the opportunity for Altuve to just DH. So, because I love seeing Rias in the field. He makes me happy every time I see him, you know, make a trap or make a play in the infield. Because I was reminded yesterday, I personally don't love seeing the Altuve second. I understand the moving him to left field has been, you know, quite a weird experiment. But I understand. I'm not saying that it's 100% right one way or the other. I do understand.
I think that was an inning where they scored their first run, too. So had he gotten picked off? Altuve, I'm talking
about. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it would have been real interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, like I said, day off for the Astros. Hope the boys enjoy before they get going on the weekend series. Some other things that are popping. This has been of interest to me, and I think of interest to all the folks who enjoyed Comets basketball back in the day. We mentioned Tillman Fertitta, you know, at the helm of a charge to bring back or to get an expansion franchise in the WNBA back into Houston. Well, you know, that expansion franchise was ultimately awarded elsewhere. I believe it was Philadelphia got the opportunity to have. And it's like, all right, well, damn. Yeah. I don't know that they're going to keep expanding past 16 anytime soon. Well, the sale of the Connecticut Sun has opened up for the WNBA, the possibility that team moves out of out of Connecticut. And according to the commissioner of the league, Kathy Engelbert, Houston, Boston, and Hartford are all in the mix for the Sun. A relocation fee could end up determining the franchise future. And look, if there's one thing I know about Tillman Fertitta, if it's put your money where your mouth is to get what you want, he's that type of guy.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, Houston seems to be gaining traction as the destination for that expansion. But Tillman... It's funny because he wants a hockey team and the WNBA.
So I don't know if he's at the lead of the hockey team because I know the Friedkin was one of the big ones when it comes to the hockey team. But he's been part of it. Yeah,
he's on the record that hockey is up there. So we'll see how that plays.
Which one would y'all rather have, hockey or a WNBA team?
I think the best thing for the city would be hockey.
No, which one would you want?
Probably hockey.
Hockey.
And that's not a slight because I think it'd be awesome to get the WNBA back, name them the Comets again. Etc. But if I had to pick one, it'd probably be hockey.
I selfishly love the WNBA, but I actually really wouldn't want hockey. Like, I don't want to have to choose. I want both.
Yeah.
Because I really want to get into the.
Good question.
You guys knew this about me before I came down. Like, I did enjoy watching some hockey, man. Mm-hmm. And so getting a chance to just go, like, as a fan. Now, of course, covering hockey is a whole different beast.
Yeah.
But, like, just being able to go to hockey games as a fan, it's one of the better fan experiences when you talk about 100%. Sporting events live.
Yeah. Yeah. So as a Xavier Leggett. Yeah. That brother having a good time at that hockey game.
Slamming on the glass and everything.
Yeah. That is my, that is my favorite subset of, like, athlete content is when they take the football player and take him to the hockey game and mic him up.
Yeah.
And just let them talk about what's happening on the ice. Yeah. It is so incredibly fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other subset of content that I love is just Xavier Leggett talking.
Yeah. He can talk about anything.
He can. In fact, I will be going and hearing what he said about the joint practice today for no other reason than let's hear Xavier Leggett talk.
He was talking about the fight that happened in that preseason game.
He was.
I think it was the first play of the game or something.
Actually, are we going to get that later today?
I got it right now.
You know what? Let's hear Xavier Leggett talk about the fight that he had against, was it the Patriots in their first preseason game?
No, it was the Browns.
It was the Browns.
Oh, man, it was just something that I shouldn't have did. And that ain't supposed to happen in a football game. So I feel like I owe the fans an apology.
Were you kind of in disbelief that it was even happening in the moment?
No, I wasn't in disbelief. I knew what was going on. But it ain't supposed to happen. He ain't say nothing. We ain't had no exchange of words. It was just, well, how? Yeah.
Love it. I love it. Both, obviously, the way he sounds, which, to be fair, I understand, is just him being country, and I love it. I got some audio on the tuck from Randy Moss, and it really is just him being country. I have an affinity for it. But also, I love that he was like, he ain't say nothing. Mm-hmm. I just decided, hey, we got to throw hands.
It felt
so we threw hands.
He didn't even sound angry.
No. Like, well, I guess I got to fight now.
Yeah, I guess I got to fight now.
I guess I got
to
fight.
He's just like, all right, we fighting. I'm sorry, there's not enough time for you to get to your Taylor Swift breakdown.
Thank God, man.
You'll hear it during confessions.
Hey, we are up against it.
You'll hear it during confessions.
I tried, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think I didn't notice you put WNBA ahead of
that. Right. Like, well, that happened today. That is literally popping.
10 million views happened today.
So you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610.
I saw him working, Figgy, but you can't keep a good man down.
I tried, ladies and gentlemen, I did. All right, coming up next, something that you don't have to try about. We'll get some insight as to what happened out there at joint practice with the Panthers from none other than the former Texan himself, Seth Payne. We'll get him on the phone and talk to him next.